This is Kiefer at Bonnaroo, and I've been joined by Dave and Vinny from Django Django. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
You guys have made it abundantly clear that the name has nothing to do with Django Reinhardt. How many boneheads now are talking to you? Oh, what about that Django Unchained?
Yeah, we get that a lot. I mean, it's actually, we named it after the original 60s Django westerns that Tarantino's obviously remade. So there is a connection, but we had no idea that Django was going to get remade, you know. So at least people know how to pronounce it now. You know, there's no Django or DJ Ango or other kind of weird interpretations. But when Django the film dropped, it was just everybody thought we would be the first people to hear jokes about Django Unchained, and it got tiresome. But
Your first time over here, I read, playing U.S. festivals. First time at Bonnaroo. Have you had a chance to look around? Any impressions?
This is the first place we came. Yeah. So we kind of drove through a lot of the like crowds and, you know, a lot of the camping area. But yeah, it sounds like it's an amazing lineup. I hadn't really looked properly until a few days ago. And then I think tomorrow's got like some really good stuff, but unfortunately we won't be here. But yeah, I would love to have seen some more stuff.
Yeah, I think some people think when you come play a festival, you get to hang around with everybody else, but you know, hey, you've got to get on the bus and head to the next gig.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys have had a lot of critical acclaim, shortlisted for Mercury Prize, but I want to talk to you about the Scottish Album of the Year. And for those who don't know about it, this is an award for an album that's not, it doesn't have a lot to do with how many units you pushed or how much money you made. As they say, it's best reflects the range of music by Scots. When you heard that you were nominated for this, did you think, oh, I'm honored, I'm flattered, mind-blowing, or damn straight, we deserve it?
I was really honored and flattered, you know, because sometimes it's easy when you leave Scotland for people to forget that you're Scottish, you're a Scottish band, or, you know, essentially we all met in Edinburgh, and the seed was kind of planted for the band in Edinburgh, and then two of us are from there, and so yeah, we are a Scottish band, and it's just good that they recognize that, and I guess that kind of shows that the not only the diversity of Scottish music, but the fact that people can leave Scotland and still be a Scottish band, you know, whether it's Franz Ferdinand or Frightened Rabbit doing so well over here, or other bands, Primal Scream, you know, sort of, you can do either. You can stay in Scotland and do your thing there, or you can move around. So it was good that people kind of accepted that and put us on there, and especially with, I mean, the great thing about it is it just kind of showcases Scottish music, which it does get overlooked a little bit, I think. And the Mercury Music Awards, great, but it's quite London-centric, you know, and this is something that kind of shines a light on all the nooks and crannies of independent labels in Scotland.
We were talking earlier about how much all of us here in the room love your record, and it's an easy one to put on repeat. And what I found endearing about it is so many of the songs sound like they could have been out of a lot of different decades. You know, that you could play some of these songs back in the late 60s, in the middle 70s, early 80s, and it would not have sounded out of place. I mean, you've got these wonderful Beach Boy kind of harmonies. There's psychedelic music. There's electronica. Take me through the process of when you start a song. What filter do you put it through, or what determines, you know, which direction a song is going to go? Because this record's really diverse. There's a lot of different things going on. A real kaleidoscope of sounds.
Yeah.
I think we love lots of different, you know, eras of music and kind of areas of music. So it's kind of difficult for us to do one certain thing and just kind of replicate that out. Because I think, and then that's, so when it comes to kind of songwriting and production, we have a lot of these kind of things that are, you know, calypso and acid house and folk music kind of all melting around in our brain, so we kind of just draw down a lot of those things. But I suppose it's we knew every song was slightly kind of in a different slant or in a kind of going in a different direction, but we always hoped that it would kind of sound like us, even though it does kind of mash it up a little bit. And, you know, all the production values and essentially all, you know, it's similar things running through it, like all the harmonies. And so I suppose we quite liked it kind of, you know, switching pace and sounding quite modern and then sounding quite old. And I suppose it's like many Beatle records, you know, you go through a complete kind of journey, you know, when one of those records where there's no one particular style, it's always kind of surprising what you get. And that's kind of, I suppose, at the end when we'd done a few and we knew that they were all slightly different, we quite thought that was quite a good thing. Maybe
somebody said listening to your music was like pouring lemonade in your brain. Can you top that?
That sounds pretty good, yeah. Especially with a hangover. Sometimes we'd like to just open the top of my head and pour lemonade in there. But that sounds like a great description. If we can make someone feel like that, we've kind of done our job, I think.
Yeah. I think somebody called us polyphonic rockabilly, it sounded, you know, I have no idea what it is or if it exists, but it sounds brilliant. I want to learn more about it.
You recorded the album in a bedroom. What is the advantages of recording a record in your bedroom as opposed to a modern studio?
You don't have to get dressed. You could just sit in your underwear and work. There wasn't an option for us. It was just either do it at home like that or not, because we were broke essentially, and there was no way we'd have had any money to spend on studio time, and plus we didn't have a clue what we were doing or what we wanted to do, so it would be pointless going in a studio and wasting money when really we were spending hours just sitting around literally sometimes hitting a tin can and putting it through five different effects units and playing with it all day, you know. And things like that can only really be done at home or in your own place, because it's just a kind of...
It doesn't matter if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can fail and try something else, and you're not against the clock. And
yeah, you're not thinking, oh, no, I need to get five songs recorded today, you know. So it was about experimentation and about learning as we went along, and I always kind of had this feeling that, you know, with producers and studios, we could technically do it better, you know, but it would kind of ruin the experience for us and the journey and the kind of learning curve, because that's kind of what this album was about, just seeing what we could get out of a broken microphone and a couple of bits of drum kit and a guitar, and seeing how, you know, we were listening to things like Aphrodite's Child or the Beatles or, you know, Bo Diddley, and just... For me, I was just sort of pulling it apart in my brain and thinking, essentially these guys have guitars and drum kits, or, you know, what makes it sound like that? And then just trying to do our best to make it sound good, I guess.
They say necessity is the mother of invention. Dovetailing off what you were talking about, tell me about how you got beats using, and I want to see if I have this right, sellotape and vinyl. Tell me how you did that.
Oh, well, there was an old trick, because I used to do a lot of DJing, and there was an old trick people used to do when they DJed, when they couldn't afford samplers or mixing desks that had loop effects. There was a trick people used to do where they would find a point in the record, like the drum break, and then they would put the corner of a bit of sellotape, you know, I don't know what you call it here, sellotape, like scotch tape.
Okay. Yeah.
So we would put it on an angle, and so when the needle hit the tape, it bounced back and created a loop. So we would do that with things like Led Zeppelin when the levee breaks, and trying to loop the drums just by making it skip. And then over the top, you would put an a cappella or scratch, you know. So that was my earliest form of experimenting with making music, because I would do that and then I would put it through a four track, and then I would do something on top and then layer that. And then there was things like you would put the roll of tape on the record deck and then turn the needle upside down and then play it underneath the record so it played backwards. And then you would, you know, loop that. And then it was anything that could be, because I was obsessed with samplers and hip hop culture, but samplers were so expensive back then. And it was anything you could do to just mess around with music. And that was our first. And then I guess we kept that kind of philosophy and those kind of weird kind of instincts going into the album and just built on that, really.
Amazing. Would you repeat the process on the next record? Would you do it in a bedroom or is it off to a studio?
I think it'll be a mix of both.
Yeah.
I think like we've done a few days in a studio, but I think in the end up we'll always kind of take it back. You know, I think we'll just have like an engineer potentially helping us just to kind of speed up the process. And I think there's expertise that they have in terms of how to mic stuff up, and that it's a bit of a dark art. So yeah, and then I think, you know, the same kind of process potentially in terms of overdubs and having time to kind of analyze it and make sure that there's not gaps and stuff like that.
One of the themes at Bonnaroo this year is album art, and I'm looking at your record that's up on the wall. I'm seeing, you know, dunes, sand dunes, and something pretty cosmic in the middle. Tell me what's going on with the record.
Well, actually, I made the album art before we started the album, because I was, when I was at art college, I was, and before that, I was obsessed with album art and I collect vinyl, and that was a big thing about vinyl collecting for me from when I used to borrow my dad's Pink Floyd records right through art college, that I would be kind of obsessed with the album art. And so it ended up being a kind of guide for the albums. We had that, and it almost was like a kind of weird spiritual guide for the record, because it ended up sounding a bit like that Luke's, you know, a bit dusty and a bit with like splashes of color. And the loose idea was that it's some kind of spirit or entity in the coming out of the dunes, you know. It's a kind of esoteric kind of being, maybe, or just it's whatever you like it to be. It's quite abstract, but that was the kind of loose theme. And actually the patterns are vitamin D and aspirin through a microscope. But that's what they look like when you, and then I just kind of cut them out of a science book. So I thought that was quite weird. But I guess we wanted the feel of it to be quite like a lot of those Pink Floyd records. And, you know, where you'd have no writing on the cover, it would just be this weird image. So, yeah.
I like it. All right. Are you Beatles fans?
Massive.
Yeah.
What we have the Beatles. We're asking people what their favorite Beatles album cover is. And for you guys, what is it? Or if one has one and one has another.
Finny, what's yours?
This one? No, I'm only joking. probably, I suppose this is quite shocking for its time. There was, you know, because everybody was doing, you know, once they had done this, everybody tried to copy.
Remember, you're on the radio. No one knows what this is.
Oh, right, sorry. Sgt. Pepper's. A lot of people started trying to copy that, and it got really colourful and really over the top, you know, like other bands trying to sort of do that and come up with these even more crazy ideas. And then they did that, which I thought was really, like, it was a kind of sidestep, you know, quite a smart move, and it kind of took everyone maybe a little bit, you know, because they were kind of used to this, like, Magical Mystery Tour kind of cover. Or, I mean, I suppose, yeah, that one for me, in terms of it's quite a statement.
For me, it's got to be Sgt. Pepper, because it's just so iconic, and it was a record my mum had, and when I was a kid, I was kind of obsessed looking at it, and I would just sit and look at it for hours, and it's got all the elements of things that I ended up getting really into, like collage and pop art and things, as I was growing up. And it's, I don't know if there's a more iconic record cover. It's just completely kind of fascinating still, you know. So yeah, Sgt. Pepper.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming by. Love the record. Django Django. It is a pleasure to have you come by.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Cheers.